welcome to episode 165 of the Daniel Yoris podcast with today's guests, Mark and Sarah of Mobility Duo. Let's go. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Joined here today by Mark and Sarah of Mobility Duo. Guys, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate your time. I know it's tough, a brand new, beautiful baby, and so making the time is not lost on me.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
This is great. It kind of throws us out of the routine a little bit, so it's good.
Has the adjustment been okay so far?
Yeah, we kind of say that we blacked out the last 2 months.
Yeah.
And now, like, he's 3 months old and things are getting a little bit easier, so I'd say we're coming around.
Yeah. It's definitely getting easier, but we've also been told that at that point, kids tend to throw curveballs, so we're just... eagerly awaiting.
Sure. And hasn't started moving around yet, crawling, walking, talking, all those things. So I'm sure there's more challenges to come, but it'll be all good.
Sure. Totally. For sure.
Absolutely.
For everybody listening, Sarah may have to kind of cut in and out of the podcast and may have to cut short. So I don't want to, just in case that happens ahead of time, people know what's up. But Sarah, you just got back on a board for the first time in a while recently. Can you talk to us about what that was like for you?
Yeah, that was actually... brought me to tears. I don't know. Anyone who's listening who's given birth, had a child, knows that you're sacrificing your body for X amount of time, you know, 9 months that you're pregnant, and then when you have the baby, and then recovery time. So it's been about a year almost to the date that I've been on any kind of board, let alone a snowboard. And this sense of self just kind of came back to me, because you kind of get lost in the sauce when you have a baby, because you're giving everything to it, and nothing is really for you anymore. And that was kind of the first time where I was like, oh my gosh, this is for me. And it was, yeah, it was really incredible. I rode with two of my favorite girls that I typically ride with on the mountain. And yeah, it was kind of like getting back on a bike. I was actually kind of nervous. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be more difficult.
You're really nervous.
I was pretty nervous. But I got up there and I was like riding switch and like going off little kickers, and I felt great.
I can only imagine what that was like, and probably a great testament as well to all of the work that you guys do in regards to strength training for snowboarding, rehab, prehab, because coming back from giving birth is not, I mean, dissimilar in many ways, but not too dissimilar from coming back from a different type of injury or something that physically keeps you off the board. Mm-hmm. And so all of the work that you guys do, you know, led to that and probably made the transition a lot easier than it maybe otherwise would have been.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I definitely trained, like, I wasn't going to be like, you know, 6 weeks, you're kind of cleared to do movement. I wasn't going to snowboard at 6 weeks. My body wasn't ready. Like, I was training to be able to do that again. So yeah, definitely.
When did you guys start snowboarding? Were you snowboarding as kids, or did you pick it up a little bit later in life? Where's your origin story on snowboarding? Mm-hmm.
I skied off and on like once or twice a year, when I was younger. But I really started snowboarding off and on when I was 15. My big brother got me into it, and I looked up to him, and, that's when I first started. And then taking it seriously, I would say when I met Sarah, so I was about 27. Mm-hmm. So it was quite a few years, a decade later.
Yeah. And then personally, I think I found it when I was either 17 or 18. It was when I graduated high school. I was homeschooled before that, and then I went to public school for high school. So I was kind of like living under a rock, didn't know what snowboarding was at all. And then I had buddies who were like, hey, do you want to go on a 3-day snowboarding trip? And I was like, sure. What is that? That sounds great. And so went snowboarding. It was 3 days in a row. So it allowed me to have those moments of like, oh, that's how you link a turn. And you like, you know, those addiction moments where you're like, oh, I get it. So then I've just been hooked ever since. So yeah, 11 years, 12 years almost.
Definitely getting to spend more time right up front rather than, you know, you go once a week and then next week and you have something going on. And then, you know, a lot of people's first 3 times snowboarding might take 2 months. And so you're not really going to get better at that, right? But 3 days in a row, that's serious entry into the game.
Yeah, it makes you feel like you were hit by a truck too. Yeah.
I just I've been snowboarding for, this was the end of my second season, and I just went to Whistler, and we did 5 days in Whistler, and that was coming from Toronto, Ontario, where we don't have actual mountains, like going to Whistler, the biggest place, that was like, oh, 5 days was, I consider myself in pretty good shape, you know, but 5 days was, that was a lot, but phenomenal, phenomenal trip.
Did you go 5 days in a row?
We did 5 days in a row, and I think it was a little bit too much. I think ideal would have been like 2 days on, 1 day off, 2 days on. And we did like full days. So it was like we were on the mountain at 9 and we were done by, you know, 2 or 3.
Holy Jesus.
Nicely done.
Well done.
again, a testament, I think, just to strength training in general for snowboarding, right? I wouldn't have been able to do that if I wasn't in shape. The reason that I wanted to ask about like when you guys started is because a lot of people will start snowboarding or any type of sport when they're relatively young. And we all know when you're a teenager or younger, you can kind of just do whatever and your body doesn't really hurt. You bounce back. It doesn't really, you know, nothing, even if you get injured, it's fine. But at what point along your guys' journey when you picked it up, did you start to think like, hey, okay, we're not teenagers anymore. We need to actually train a little bit. We need to do something outside of being on the mountain to start to increase our longevity so that we can do this for forever. Like, what was that moment like for you guys?
Mm-hmm.
I think for me was when I was like 20 something, maybe 22. I think when I was 20 years old, I broke my clavicle snowboarding. And that was for me like that moment of like, oh, this isn't safe. You know, like that never hit me before. I was just always like, la, 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 this is so much fun. And then I broke a bone and then I was like, oh, you can get hurt doing this. Just realized that. Mm. And then I think, yeah, coming back the year after that, I was a little bit more hesitant. And then it was probably the following year. So yeah, like probably 22 years old where I was like, oh, I need to like train for this because I feel the aches and pains a whole lot more now than I did when I was 17, 18 years old.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Mark, what was it for you?
You know, I've been training for a long time, weight training, strength training since I was 15. For various sports. But I got really into mountain climbing, rock climbing when I was about 25, 26. And I really started to gear my training towards that. During that time as well, I started to direct my efforts towards graduate school, pursuing physical therapy. And I realized that I had a lot more responsibility. So I think that's a turning point for a lot of adults is, you now have it's not just yourself. Now you're thinking about other things, endeavors, goals, pursuits. So I wanted to make sure that when I'm going up, one, I'm at my very best, functionally, mentally, emotionally. And then two, if something does happen, because there are things that are completely out of my control, I can bounce back as quickly as possible. So those were the two kind of shifts in my thinking.
Something that I think a lot of people don't think about enough in like adult league hockey, where people love to fight. And like, and the reason I stopped playing is like, guys, we got to go to work tomorrow morning. What are we doing here? Who cares about this? We're just going to have a couple beers after the game. And like, what's the difference? But, you know, not too dissimilar with snowboarding, where it's like, hey, I want to have fun. And, you know, you want to take some risks because that's part of the fun as well. But also, like, I can't just be not able to walk and not able to use your hands and not able to do stuff if you have any amount of physicality in your job, right? And I think we all, obviously now, we all fall into that category.
Yeah, yes, yes. Absolutely. Yeah, we play Sunday league soccer and it's the same thing.
And it's indoors, so it's same as like hockey where there's walls and you slam into the walls and the ground.
Indoors even worse for soccer. I used to referee soccer. That was my main sport growing up. And then after I stopped playing, I refereed and it was I never played adult league soccer for that reason because the guys were just fighting and slide. And the better players on the field were the ones that getting the target of the bad tackles and stuff like that. And it's disappointing, honestly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is what it is.
Brutal.
Yeah. It's always, you know, I think about snowboarding, like I watch people snowboarding and I would say, hey, it would be wicked if I could do a backflip off a snowboard. But then I think about it and then I'm like, am I really gonna like go for that? Like it's not, you know, but if I was younger when I started, I would have had that lack of fear maybe to try those things and you would maybe get it, right? But now the threat of a serious injury there is like is too great. And so that is maybe one of those things that's a little bit outside of the norm. And there are a number of injuries that can come from snowboarding, obviously some well within well outside of our control, but some well within our control. And so what are some of the injuries that you guys see that are like, hey, if this person was a little bit stronger, a little bit more prepared for this, this kind of injury would be a little bit more preventable in snowboarding?
That's a great question. I think fatigue takes out more people than anything. And so like your 5 days at Whistler, like if you weren't on top of your training and like working, you know, for other things in life, but snowboarding too, then by the end of like, I don't know, fourth or fifth day, your body's tired. And then by the end of that day, let's say 3 p.m., you just might give a little bit less effort on this turn or a little bit less effort on this jump. And then that's it. That's the one that does it, you know? So I think muscle endurance, we talk about all the time, being able to withstand the load as long as possible as what you do on the mountain. Like you should be able to withstand that off the mountain as well. Because the second you start getting to that point where you're like, oh, my body can't take this. Like my, I can't bend my knees anymore. My quads are shot. Then that's when you go.
Yeah, that's an amazing answer. That's not where I thought you were going to take that at all, but it makes perfect sense when you say it like that. Is that then the place that you'd start most people who are kind of coming to you is like, hey, it's just kind of GPP, general physical preparedness. That's like item number one to start working on, or assuming the person has no current injuries?
Yeah, I think if someone, that's like my first question when someone asks, hey, I'm going for a snowboard trip. I only go a handful of times a year. First question I ask them is, how active are you right now? Most people, not all, will say, sort of active, not that active as much as I used to be. I'll say, okay, just start like a body weight program and go from there. More importantly, though, increase your aerobic activity, whether that be going for longer walks, going for a walk jog, going for hill runs, whatever that may be, to train your heart in variable rates and get it back down as fast as possible. That's like where people should stick with, if they have a trip. And because trying to change a habit that you haven't changed in years just to prep for, it might work for some people, but realistically, you're probably not going to do anything. So just make these little changes. And yeah, exactly what Sarah said in regards to injuries happen when we least expect it, right? Whether that's through fatigue, whether that's not seeing, you're not able to react fast enough. Someone gets in your way. And then to answer your question, the most common injuries we see by far are upper extremity for snowboarders, shoulder, wrist specifically, concussions and contusions on the body, whether that be tailbone, or knees, whatever that may be. Yeah.
I'd also like to add on a little bit more serious note. There's a lot of people, like Mark said, that maybe once they snowboarded when they were younger or they did these sports when they were younger and they go back up to the mountain not thinking that, you know, it's that intense, like kind of how I did when I was younger. You don't think much of it. But it is incredibly taxing on the body. And we've unfortunately seen heart attacks on the mountain before. We've seen people getting life-flighted and
happens all the time.
Chest compressions. Like, wow. You really, like, yes, it's fun and it's a great activity that we all enjoy doing. But at the same time, you have to realize that it's also like you're on a mountain sliding down on frozen water on basically a piece of wood. Like, you know, like it is pretty
at elevation,
at speed with a bunch of other people who don't know what they're doing on the mountain. You know, like there's just so many variables that you have to make sure that your body can do that, because unfortunately, with this sport, sometimes it is life or death. Like, we've seen it a couple of times.
Yeah, it's definitely not totally impossible to lose control, end up going way too fast, and slam into a tree. I think we probably all know someone who's broken an arm or got a concussion from hitting in a tree, and they were even maybe a quite an experienced, or like they would a self-proclaimed good skier or snowboarder, right? Absolutely. In Whistler, one of the most amazing things that I saw was how many elderly people, they were all skiing, none of them were snowboarding, but like I didn't ask them, but 65 plus for sure on the mountain. And I was like, wow, that is unbelievably, my grandparents certainly could not be doing that. And I wonder, I wish I had talked to them, and are they training for this? Is it just something that, you know, maybe they live nearby and they're, you know, on the mountain a couple days a week, but either way, like they're not there in the summer. So this is where like the off mountain training comes in, because most other sports, somewhat to some degree the best training for the sport is just playing the sport. Yes. But skiing and snowboarding doesn't really fall into that category because you can't really go all year round. And even the time of year you can go, like, you can't just be there every single day unless you live there and don't have a real job, right? It's, yeah. you have to be doing something else. So it makes a lot of sense that your general fitness is item number one to start taking care of. Yeah. Now, Mark, when we start talking about upper body injuries and head injuries and stuff like that, how do we go about trying to prevent that as best as possible? Because those are going to come from falls more than incorrect technique or something like that. How can we train in such a way that maybe starts to prevent some of those things, or maybe lessen the blow of them when they happen?
Yeah, so a couple of things. I think of off mountain training as a numbers game. So it's being in situations that might compromise you or having close calls, but having that training reduces that risk. Mm-hmm. The other side of that is learning how to fall. Now that takes a lot of practice. It's not simply, okay, like if I'm teaching my students on the mountain, I'll teach them how to fall gracefully, arms in, tucking in. But to do that through instinct is really, really hard. So practicing that over and over and over again. But honestly, it's hard, right? So some things you can work on are reaction speed. What else? Again, learning how to fall, power, learning how to create power quickly, endurance, to be able to last, to be at your peak all day on the mountain. And then lastly, I would say knowing when to quit is a big one. I think a lot of that, and you get better at that when you get older. You can understand your body if you're fatigued, knowing when to say, I've had enough today. I'm just going to go hang out in the lodge or in the car. You guys do your thing. I think that's really, really hard. And that's a skill.
Yeah. One of those things that, the only way to find the limit is to cross it kind of thing. Yeah. So at some point you got to overdo it and be like, oh, all right. That was the line. Now I know, and I'll try not to cross that next time, right? But I think the thing with falls has always been, and it's one of the justifications for strength training and fitness in general. People say it doesn't make me live a longer life. If I get hit by a bus tomorrow, because I can bench press 200 pounds, it's not going to protect me. And all that is true. However, in the face of some catastrophic accident, you are more likely to be okay or less injured or recover faster if you're just in better shape overall. So you lose control on your board, you slam into a tree, you break your arm, it sucks, it's horrible, but you're more likely to bounce back faster than someone who was in worse shape. And I think that's really the drive home message for a lot of people who are like, hey, I can snowboard and I'm good. I'm still young enough to like not really care and I'm okay. But it's like you won't know you need it until after you need it.
Yeah. And I think anybody who's ever been injured knows that when you injure one part of your body, the rest has to make up for it. Mm-hmm. The rest of the body has to get you up off the ground, has to walk you down the street, has to whatever it is. Like everything you do in normal day-to-day life, the rest of your body is taking over the load that limb once took over. And so other things, other ailments start to pop up. But that's why being strong before that happens is really important. That way you can recover and still be able to do things. I don't know if you know Casey Willax, but he broke his foot. He break his foot or sprain?
Fibula.
I think it was his Achilles, no?
His fibular fracture.
Oh.
Okay. So, but it didn't stop him, like he was still moving and doing things with his upper body and with his core and like hobbling around on one leg. Like when you have fitness, you're able to keep going through injury versus if you can barely get off the couch because you have a break in your leg, then what are you going to achieve during that time?
Agreed. Another element of that is I think you get better body awareness. And so when something is tired or fatiguing, you can kind of like get the same outcome by using a different part of your body. Like, oh, your quads are firing a little bit or a little bit fatigued. And so, okay, how can I just use like my weight shifting a little bit more or, send some of the twisting up into my, into my torso rather than relying on my quads or my glutes or my whatever. But that only comes with body awareness. When you only have, one tool in the toolbox, when that tool is breaks, it's a bad day. But when you've got more tools, you can make do. Or it's not ideal, but you can get by, especially on these like longer days or longer trips.
Yeah. And I think it depends on your mindset a little bit, but it's almost fun because it becomes explorative. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, what can I do with this? I've never done that before, but you've never had to because you've never had that injury. Mm-hmm. So sometimes moments like that can be a mental thing too of like, okay, we got this. Like my body's strong. My body's capable. Let's figure this out. Let's do it a different way. Oh my gosh, that's really cool. You know, like it just leads. So yeah, mental is definitely in there as well. Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of those realizations when I was in Whistler as well, as things were getting tired. It's like, okay, like I know my technique is not perfect. I know like I'm not that good. You know, I know all these things. But on this run, it's a little steeper. It's a little bit faster. This one is a little bit more moguls. How can I change this? You know, try a different technique, try mm-hmm. twisting less, twisting more, squatting deeper, like standing up taller, like all of these different elements. But again, you've got to have those tools and have that body awareness, I think, to be able to do that. Not to pat myself on the back, but I think I'm a good example of someone who is not a good snowboarder, but is or does have good fitness, mm-hmm. and how that translates over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all efficiency at the end.
Trying to be efficient for me, I just try to power through it, and it's like, okay, huh, a little less. But
yeah, I think a good example of that, if we're on that broaching that topic, is like climbing, is a perfect example of that. Someone who is new into climbing will kind of brute force their way up, arms up, and then they're just gassed halfway up. And then you see someone who's experienced, who's utilizing their legs and their core and 3 points of contact, and they look so graceful and make it look so easy, and they're just doing laps around you. It's the same thing. Like every sport, you see someone who's good at it, who's done it for years. It's all efficiency. Like Messi is another good example of that in the soccer field. Like he doesn't move. Like you literally just see him standing there, but he's constantly examining everything. He's watching the defender. He's watching the ball, and then he knows where the space is. And then boom, he scored. Like where did that just come from?
Yeah.
You know, and then same with professional snowboarders. Like they're looking for the lines. They're aware of their bodies. It's really cool mm-hmm. and fun to watch.
It almost causes a bit of a problem. I don't know if you experienced this with any like young snowboarders maybe that you guys work with, but in soccer, it was a bit of an issue for me when I was coaching, because the kids would watch Messi and Ronaldo and then try and copy things that they did. And sometimes it's good, but sometimes it's like, well, Messi's walking for like 3/4 of the game. Like if you're not him, so you can't do that. Like you can't just copy. You can't copy those things. Like he is doing a million other things that you're not doing that you can't see. But it can. The top performers in any field, they do things a little bit different than what we're all supposed to do, and that's what makes them great. And I can't pick out the things that exist for that in snowboarding, but I'm sure that that exists as well.
Yeah, they're masters of their craft.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're 100% correct. I think that can be, it's a double-edged sword, right? But yeah, it's a hard one. With, you know, specifically a professional snowboarder, I think it's just that body awareness, knowing their tool, which is a snowboard, the board awareness, like they just know it so well. And just one little tweak, one little move of their toe, you know, going on their heel edge can make all the difference, can save them from a nasty fall. Like, it's just amazing the millimeters that it takes with an edge in the snow. That's pretty cool to see.
And these are things that just come with time. You know, some of us are meant to be great at certain sports and activities, and some of us are not. And no matter how much you train, you might not ever get to be the best. But that's what makes sports so cool.
Yeah, and I think people sometimes forget as we get older that, like, we didn't start snowboarding to be cool. You know, we didn't start soccer. Yeah, maybe some. But like, you do it to have fun, and you don't do it to learn something new. Like, I honestly think we're all just trying to learn, because that's where like the dopamine hits come from. Like I said earlier, when you get on this board and you don't know anything, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's how you link a turn. Like, that dopamine is addictive, and that goes with every sport too. Like, I think sometimes when we get to a certain level, something comes over us where we're like, okay, we need to be better. It's like, no, you just start learning again. Be a student again. Allow someone to teach you. Allow the board to teach you. Slow down a little bit. Like, practice things you haven't done before at a slower pace. Like, I think, sometimes people get lost in the sauce with any sport, but specifically snowboarding too, where it's like, I'm the best. I'm like, well, you can be the best. That's okay. In your own world, like, you should all think you're the best, right? Like, you should go up there being like, I'm so cool, because that confidence gives you like the ability to do things, but also starving the ego enough to be like, no, I'm still a student and I'm willing to learn as well.
I love that. I had this very similar realization again when I was in Whistler. It was like, I'm not the best snowboarder. I will never be the best snowboarder. I don't care to be the best snowboarder, but I've gotten good enough that I'm able to have this experience. And if I didn't, you know, pick up this hobby, I would have never been riding up that peak chair, coming over the cliff, and like, you know, all these things that that happened there would have never happened not ever snowboarding. And so I think that's what it's really about. I think you nailed it. Like, people after a certain age stop learning new things, whether it be sports or music or, you know, name your hobby. It doesn't really matter. But when we're kids and when we're young, we learn so many things, and we're always learning things and picking up and trying new stuff. And then at some point we stop that. And I think anyone who picks up a new hobby has these kind of things like, oh, it's just great to learn again. Great to have that white belt mentality and continue to just kind of suck at something. It definitely hits your ego a little bit in a good way, but then you can get better at it. And that's really the more fun part. It's the getting better. It's not the being good.
Yes. Amen.
Yep. I think that's a secret weapon. I think board sport, board culture, has this kind of cool factor to it that I think a lot of people are attracted to, is call it presence, freedom, coolness, whatever it may be. But I think ego tends to get involved in a lot of it. We're all trying to, not all of us, but many of us are trying to be cool. This is, that's what you see at the professionals are, you know, mm-hmm. And if you can put that away, you can set that aside, put it in your pocket and just go out to improve for yourself. Regardless of whatever anybody else thinks, regardless of whatever gear you have, it doesn't matter. That's like the best part. And that's, those are the people that get better way faster than everybody else.
To be willing to learn.
Willing to learn, and they don't care what anybody else thinks. And they're willing to ask for help and questions from those who are better.
One of the best things I did ahead of the trip was hiring an instructor for a couple of sessions. Because who am I to think that I could be just figured? I can figure it out up to a point, but at some point I'm just stuck in my bad habits. And like, I don't know. I know that it's wrong, but I don't know how to fix it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, reaching out for help. And this is with all of fitness, is so many people. I'm sure you guys have met tons of them. Like, hey, you know, I go to the gym, I eat right, I do this and that, but I just like haven't progressed in 7 years. I'm like, okay, well, obviously Something's not working at this point, right? And so we have to, you know, ask for help, and that's very okay and very normal. And we've all gotten help from teachers and coaches and everything throughout our whole life. So why would that stop, or why would that have to stop once we're adults?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's really cool here at Bachelor, I don't know about other mountains, but they offer freestyle classes or freestyle lessons. And just 2 years ago, Mark and I took a freestyle lesson, because same thing, like, we taught ourselves how to snowboard, or we were taught by friends, you know, like, we don't know. Snowboarding is math, by the way. If you haven't talked to somebody, like, snowboarding is all about degrees and all about small movements. Like, if you talk to someone who really knows what they're talking about, snowboarding is math. And so we took this lesson with this guy, Goose, who is just the head, what is he? The head trainer here at Mount Bachelor for the coaches. And he trained us on a freestyle lesson, and the amount that we learned in that day was incredible. Like, we've been snowboarding for 10 plus years, and still in one day we take a lesson and we're just like, oh my gosh, I had no idea, but this little tiny degree makes that big of a difference. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so take lessons. Doesn't matter where you are in your snowboarding journey.
Agreed. And you bring up a good point here, something that I did want to talk about in talking about degrees and equipment a little bit, is the actual setup of one's equipment. Can you give any tips, or do you have any insight on how to best go about setting up your equipment to, not necessarily on the performance side, but at least to like mitigate injury? And they're probably very closely related.
Yeah, we get that question a lot. You know, first and foremost, we are not gear experts. We're body movement experts. But what I will say, is I think you have to look at the person first. So first, do you have a history of injury? Let's say, Daniel, that you have a history of,
knee injuries.
Yeah, knee injury. Let's say you have a history of knee injury. So if I were to watch you squat, I want to see what your movement patterns are. Are you, do you have a lack of dorsiflexion? Are you externally rotating to compensate? Are you stiff in the hips? So maybe the next question, what kind of riding, what kind of terrain are you going to be on? Are you going to be on side country off piste? Are you going to be on the groomers? Are you going to be in the park? So do we need to adjust your stance a little bit wider if you're having a more dynamic carving session? Do we need to bring it in a little bit? Maybe you're popping up threes and fives and you need to spin a little bit faster. So I'm going to put those things together. I'm going to watch how you move. So do I need to, because you externally rotate at the knees, do I need to maybe make you a bit more duck footed? Are you riding switch? So let's make it equal on both sides. Are you a directional rider? So maybe we can put that back one in a neutral position, put that first one forward. So it's, I wish I could give you like, one answer to provide, for everybody, but it's just so complicated. And I think first and foremost, people need to listen to their bodies. They need to look at what their history is like, and they need to look at what kind of riding that they're doing. And then it's just a lot of trial and error. Don't be afraid to ride, set it up, take a lap or two, go back to the workshop and adjust it a little bit. Like, there are nerds out there that will tweak their stances every single time. That's not me, because I'm comfortable. I want to get at it and do my thing. But there are people that like know what their high back needs to be. They know how much posi negative their feet need to be. They know how their width. Oh, it's heavy powder. I'm going to widen my width out today. Like, it's just, it's really cool, but it can be daunting, for someone who's new, knowing what to do. But to go back and answer your question, 15, 15, positive 15, negative 15, roughly 19 to 21 inches, apart in your stance, in general, will cover most people.
I think that's ballsy to say. I don't think we can say that. I honestly think that it depends on each person. Like Mark said, whatever your squat is like in the gym, that's how your squat should be on the board. Like, if you're comfortable loading yourself in this position, then that's the position that you should be when you're catching yourself from air or from whatever. Because if you start to put yourself in a different position than what you're typically loading, then your body is not set up. It's not prepared for that. So the squats that you're able to do in the gym, loaded or unloaded or just whatever feels natural, that's how I think that your board should be set up. Of course, the style of riding comes into play. I love switch, so I'm always duck-footed, like evenly. But that's how I squat too, so that works out well. Versus people, like Mark said, who are a little bit more posi-posi in the powder and want to do more surfy. Like, obviously, they don't squat like that. That would be weird. But that's when it's like snowboarding is also training. Like, you doing it is what's training you to withstand that. It's kind of, cause it's a weird stance. Posi-posi is weird. Both toes going in the same direction, very surfy. And so maybe you go up for an hour the first day, and then maybe you can do an hour and a half the next day and you snowboard. You know, like, that's how you train to not injure your knees, is like do a little bit more every time. Because unless you're in the gym practicing posi-posi, then that'd be different. But yeah, I'd say like whatever you can squat, that's how your legs should be. That stance, that where your feet are, everything about that should be how you are on the board.
I would have been wildly impressed and slightly concerned if you guys were able to give me a one direct answer that's perfect for everyone. But of course, the answer is it depends. But I think the deeper answer there is to take a look at what's feeling good for people. I know that I tweaked my stance a bunch when I was starting, and partly it was because I didn't know what I was doing, and partly it was because I sucked. And as I sucked a little bit less, I was like, okay, I can change this, and I start to understand. And when I do it this way, it hurts or doesn't feel great. And when I do it this way, like, it actually feels good. I have more control. It doesn't hurt my knee. It doesn't hurt this. Mm-hmm. And so I think the take home, I mean, those are all great points. Like, the way you squat, the way that feels comfortable, the generalization of the width and the angles, like, that all makes sense. And there's got to be a starting point, because otherwise, you know, how would you even know where to start? You just put your feet on the board and go. And I think that there's a lot of people who probably do end up, they never adjust their bindings, never adjust their stance or anything at all, and they're like, oh, my right knee just always hurts. And it's not maybe because they're not good at snowboarding or because they fall. It's just because, well, your binding is in a weird setup here, and if you just change that, you'd ride better and also feel more comfortable. But there's a lot more individualization than meets the eye, and certainly way more than I thought there was before I started snowboarding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also think like the body is capable of any movement as long as you train for it. I don't know if you follow something with a beard. He has a giant beard and he's all about butter joints and he does all this weird stuff with his joints. Anyways, basically.
I think I know who you're talking about, but I forget his name as well.
I can't remember his name. Driving nuts. But like he does all these crazy movements, but he starts out small and it gets bigger and then he puts on load and there's all this. You can train your body into any movement and to withstand any load. Like your body is robust. And so, yeah, if you ride a certain way on the snowboard, just make sure that that's a common movement for you.
His name, I believe, is Amir Zadinajad. Beard the best you can be on Instagram.
Beard the best you can be. Yeah.
Great handle. But yes, I agree with that. Like all that movement style training and animal flows, FRC, you know, we'll call it whatever. There's a million different names for it, but all of it is like, how do you make your joints work better? How do you make your body move better? And then you can kind of handle anything that comes at you, because that's what getting injured is when you do something that your body doesn't have the capacity to do and then it breaks, right? So if we can increase our capacity, then we're less likely to get injured or get injured, not as badly.
Yeah. Well put.
Yeah.
Are there other injuries then that you see aside from falls where people do tweak ankles, knees, hips? What's common in that sense from the way that people are riding outside of falls?
Yeah, I would say tendinopathy based injuries, specifically for newer riders who are stuck generally in that heel side position for most of the day. Or maybe the boot or binding is pulling on like their posterior tib tendon on their lateral foot, or fibularis muscles are being overworked. So it's a lot of overworked tendons that get inflamed. I would say, what else?
I would say that's a really good one. You know, like skiing is a lot of ACL, MCL, meniscus, knee kind of stuff because your legs are separate. Snowboarding, there's a lot of knee pain, but not necessarily a torn ligament like that. It's more like the tendinopathy, like Mark was saying. So,
yeah,
I would say low back.
Yeah, especially when people, generally newer riders, get stuck in the position. They're so stiff for most of the day that it can definitely spark some low back tightness that revamps.
Or they don't know how to like kind of hold themselves. So like, yes, their nose is going downhill, but they're twisted to also face downhill versus like staying stacked. You know what I mean? Like they're constantly in a twisted motion that puts a lot of strain on the low back too. Like
not utilizing their core versus relying on soft tissue or bony prominences to make those turns for them, especially after they're fatigued for most of the day.
Hip flexors.
Yeah.
There's a lot of strained hip flexors out there. From like, bringing your knees up when you're trying something new and your hip flexor is like, whoa, I had never once trained to like bring up weight before.
Uh-huh.
And then they just get a strain there. Yeah. So not most of the like intense injuries are upstairs. A lot of the more like aches, pains, and sorenesses are downstairs.
Is it fair to say then that a lot of these aches, pains, sorenesses are equal parts due to lack of fitness, lack of strength, as lack of ability to ride properly?
I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, it comes back, right, but to efficiency. So an experienced rider, regardless if you're like, a good example is if you ever see surfers, you'll see like, usually there's a surfer out there that looks completely overweight and out of shape, but they're just so graceful on the water. And they're such a good surfer because they've been doing it their whole life and they know exactly what to do, how much effort to exert. It's no different on a snowboard. But again, like it also comes back to what are you training for? I always say a bodybuilder is great. They may look fantastic to look at, but they're great at training in a gym. Mm-hmm. Take them out of a gym, put them in a 5K or climbing a wall. They're going to die. I mean, not like literally, but they're just going to gas out quickly. Yeah. You take someone who's, I hate using this word, functionally fit, who is trained specifically for snowboarding or climbing or whatever, they're going to run laps and be able to do it more efficiently. They may not be the best. They might not be a pro or someone who's expert in what they do, but they're going to learn quickly because they can maintain their energy. They have the body awareness. and they can just do it for a lot longer.
I will say the overweight surfer example, like, yes, they're a master at their own craft and they've finessed it, but also because they've done it so often, they've trained in a way that like their ankles can do it because they've been doing it forever. They've been doing, it's like training with your sport versus training in the gym, right?
Mm-hmm.
They just train with their sport and that's it. So like, I think it's a 50-50 of finding the efficiency, but then also having the body and the body awareness, like you talked about, and the strength to be able to do those things, especially for first time riders or anyone who's green, you know, like, yeah, you're just less at risk if you take care of yourself before you go.
Which would be most people who are listening to this, right? Pro snowboarders are probably not listening. Maybe they are,
yeah,
but exactly. Probably not like listen to this, right? Yeah. So most people are like not professional snowboarder, haven't been doing it since they were 7 years old. And so maybe they have a little bit of experience. They're good, not great, and they're in decent shape. But if they were in better shape, like your best bet at this point is not to go back in time and be a better snowboarder. Your best bet is get in better shape so you can withstand your shortcomings in your technique while also striving to become more efficient and improve your technique. But that is going to be harder and take longer, I think, than getting just generally stronger and a little bit more specific for snowboarding.
You know, I always love working with endurance-based athletes because that comes back to like I talked about in the beginning, like that's half the battle is that endurance aspect. That's why I have a huge and heavy emphasis on HIIT-based workouts, because you're you know, doing two things at once. You're getting your heart rate up, keeping it up, but you're also getting that strength aspect. And that's exactly what snowboarding is. It's kind of this weird dance between an endurance athlete that has to spend all day on the mountain, constantly contracting their muscles in varying, you know, degrees of contraction, but also having the power and strength to be able to stop on a dime,
mm-hmm.
or to be able to get up and down off the snow, et cetera, et cetera. So, I think that's a really, really overlooked aspect of snowboarding, again, is that endurance side of it.
And then to do it again and again and again. And that's the whole point, right?
5 days in a row.
Yeah. You reminded me of, I don't know if you guys have seen, probably haven't had much time for leisure lately, but there's a show on Netflix, Physical 100. And it's a Korean game show, very much modeled after kind of like Squid Games, where there's a bunch of contestants and they go through a series of trials and contests and things, and it's to see who is the most fit, mm-hmm. right? And your example reminded me of it, because in the top three or five or whatever it was, there was a bodybuilder who was a pretty big dude, and then there was a CrossFit guy, and then like a Army Ranger forest rescue type of dude. And, you know, surprise, surprise, the CrossFit guy won, because CrossFit is about, you know, being able to do all of the things and maybe not specializing in any one of those things, but being able to do all of those things. And this is where that whole functional fitness, which is a word that has probably been way overused in the fitness industry, but I think we all understand that it means you're generally able to do all the things. And unless you're a professional athlete in a specific sport, you don't need to specialize in a specific thing. And just for the general things of life, snowboarding included, if that's something that's fun for you, you want to be able to do that for now comfortably and for as long as you ever want to. Mm-hmm. And that's where most people need to be. And this is why that HIIT style training, a little bit of aerobics, a little bit of strength, a little bit of power, a little bit of flexibility, mobility, like, we kind of got to do it all. And it can seem overwhelming, but if you want to do all the things you want to do, like, this is kind of what it takes.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about diversifying your training all the time. Like, I was researching some stuff about like kids training, you know, like if you want your kid to be a well-rounded athlete, they don't, like, let's say you want your kid to be a basketball star, whatever. It actually hurts them to just train at basketball.
Mm-hmm.
They should be diversifying their training. Go on bike rides, go on runs, play sports that don't, you know, do as much cutting. Hand coordination, like tennis, racket sports are incredible for your, what's it called? Reactive, you know, right. Like rate. Like if you diversify your training, you become a better athlete versus if you just focus on one.
Yeah, that's well well established in research as well. There was a professor of mine in university, his name's Dr. Joe Baker. He was on the podcast a while back and he came up with a book, I think last year, it's called The Tyranny of Talent. Great book for anyone to read, but it goes over a lot of these things of this whole nature versus nurture debate in sports and athletics, and well, how much of it is just the way you're born and how much of it is your training and the other social, economic, dynamic issues in your life that lead to becoming a professional / world-class athlete of any kind. And certainly diversifying sport is one of them. And I think just for regular people, like that is also a good thing. We're not all going to be pro snowboarders or pro soccer players or pro whatever, but we all want to do some activities and just do regular things in life that do require some element of physicality. And that's just the fact of life.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Actually, this is off tangent, but I think Malcolm Gladwell talks about that, right? In his 10,000 hours book. I forget what that's called. But he talks about the hockey players who were born in like a specific month.
Yeah, January to March, because you're just at the top end of the age group.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then it's like the coaching that you're able to obtain because of that throughout your formative years, and they all end up becoming better because of that, versus it's not just pure talent, like you're saying. You know, there's just so many complex factors into this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, guys, it looks like people are getting restless there, and I think we've done a great job, and this has been amazing. Is there anything that you guys wanted to discuss that we haven't touched on today? We could go for way longer, but I want to be respectful of your time.
No, I don't think so. Other than the mental aspect, we do strength training for snowboarders, but we also do yoga for snowboarders. Mm-hmm. And yoga, people think is, you know, just flexibility. I thought it was for the longest time too, but when I did my training, I realized that 90% of yoga is mental and 10% is physical. And so I like to pull people in to do yoga for snowboarders by being like, oh yeah, we're doing yoga for this trick or to save your joints. But secretly, I'm like, I want to just give them all the positive mental like practice that they can take with them, because just, yes, we train for the mountain, but we also train for life. And these skills that we want to help people with are not only for the mountain. Like, we want them to have better relationships. We want them to have healthier work environments. We want them to be people or humans that just contribute to society. You know, like, we want to make good everywhere, and it's not just on the mountain, too. So I love pulling people into yoga for snowboarders, because of the physical stuff. But then secretly, I'm like, it's all mental. We do breath work. We do meditation. We talk about pretty heavy things sometimes too. Like, so yeah, that's a whole aspect that I would love to dive into if we had more time.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, I think that most people in the fitness industry would agree with that on some level, where we gotta, you know, get people in or sell them, for lack of a better term here, on the abs and the butt and the biceps and the whatever. But really, it's like, this improves everything else in your life. Like, the physical aesthetic transformation is cool and valid, but like, it's kind of like, you know, number 6 or 7 on the list of of cool things that are going to happen when you embark on this journey. So yeah. so I love that, and I love that it's a part of everything that you guys do, and a pretty big part of it as well. So yeah, so thank you for doing that and for bringing that into the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think just to go off of what Sarah said, I think people pursue things such as snowboarding for presence, right? We want to get in that flow, whether that is just to be present, to experience this life that's so short, or whether it's to forget other things that may be going on in your life. So snowboarding, you know, the physical side, like Sarah is saying, it can absolutely be beneficial, but there's also that presence that when you can find that, when you can feel that flow on and off the mountain, it makes all the difference.
Yeah.
And that's the skill that I think we're both trying to convey, trying to teach people, because it makes the experience, either by yourself or with your community, so much better.
Yeah.
So
presence.
Yeah.
And given all that, you know, what a shame it is for your physical body to be the thing that is holding you back from that. Right. It's not easy to train and be in shape and all these things, but it's very, it's a term for this. It's very figure outable to improve your strength and improve your physical body so that you can then go and have all of these experiences and awakenings and moments in your life. Call them whatever you want, and we can get very woo-woo here. I'm very okay to go into that. Yeah. But you could have all of those things. And again, what a shame it is if your physical body is a thing that is holding you back from that. And it breaks my heart when you see people like that. I'm sure it's the same for you guys.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Especially because, you know, everything comes and goes in seasons. Like for us, even like we're not at our 100 at our best self all the freaking time. That's just not realistic. Right now, I just had a baby. Like I'm trying to get back to like my best self too. But when you've been there and you know how good it feels to run X amount or X fast, you know, like, you know, that feeling that it gives you, or snowboard in a certain way or lift a certain way, or even for me, like yoga, I can close my eyes, turn on music and just like get weird on the mat because you just get in this flow state and you know what that's like. And so when you don't have that, you're then chasing that because you're like, oh, I want to get back to that place where I felt good, you know, not just physically, but like, spiritually, mentally, woo-woo, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And my heart kind of hurts sometimes for people who haven't experienced that, or people who just think that it's all about looks. I'm like, it's not about looks. Train for what you love to do, not for how you want to be perceived.
I love that. That's a great quote. Yeah. I love that a lot. Guys, where can people find you? What can they plug into? I know you guys just released a new core training program, but kind of rattle off all your contact info and where people can learn more about everything that you guys do.
Yeah, mobilityduo.com is like the overall arcing. You can find everything there, all of our programs. We're mostly on Instagram, but we also have YouTube as well. We do have a TikTok. It is currently dead at the moment, but I'm keep telling myself I'm going to get back to it. But yeah, Mobility Duo everywhere. We have a bunch of programs, Snoga, Core, like you said, we have a 12-week training program. Hello. Mm-hmm. So Mobility Duo everywhere.
Awesome. I will put that in the show notes with the links, so it's easy for people to find. Is there any last message that you want to leave the people with here in closing?
Oh. Mm. If you don't enjoy working out, or if you don't enjoy, I don't know, any fitness routine that you're trying to create, find one that you do enjoy. So like, if you don't like the gym, don't work out in the gym. Go on hikes, go on bike rides. If you don't like that, like go in dance classes with your community. Do something that gives you life and you're not just trying to work out.
Love it. Mark?
Oh, we were listening to a podcast yesterday with Dr. Peter Attia. And someone asked, how do you make a 20 or 30 something year old care about their health 30 years down the line when it matters more? And he said something that really resonated with me. He said, spend time with people who are in that state already. Now, I don't know how you're able to do that, whether you go to a SNF or a senior home or whatever that may be, but he was just talking about how those who are in their 20s and 30s think, oh, that'll never be me. I'll never get to that point. But then Dr. Peter Attia says, what gives you the right to say that? Why, we need to go back to when they were your age and see what they were like. And I think you'd be unpleasantly surprised that they're probably no different than you and I. So just think about that. Hopefully that resonates. And the time is now. Everything you do now, whether that may be strength training, eating well, spending time with the ones you love, will pay off later on. And I don't think anyone ever regrets doing those things and bettering themselves. And at the end of the day, I truly believe everybody knows what the right thing to do is. Mm-hmm. It's just about making those positive changes. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Beautiful. What an amazing place to leave it. That's also the message I'm always trying to get across. And of all the injuries and stuff that I've had that got me here, you know, I'm thankful for them because it made me realize that, you know, it was bad and it was hard and it hurt and all that stuff, but it made me realize that much earlier than I would have otherwise. So I think that's great. Guys, thank you so much. I appreciate you very much. At Mobility Duo on Instagram, mobilityduo.com for everything that Mark and Sarah have going on, all their programs, everything else like that. Make sure you're following them on Instagram and all the places. Follow me as well. Like, share, subscribe to the podcast, all of those good things. And that's that. Go outside, be a good person. See you next time.